Like clockwork. Thank you, Ms. Dozman. And with that, we're back on the record and we're about to have cross-examination of Peter Best.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. Piper Thornburg here on behalf of the appellant, and I'll be handling the cross-examination of this witness.
Go right ahead.
All right, thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Best. I know we've met over Zoom before, but I don't think we've met in person. As you know, I'm the attorney assisting Mr. Jones and Ms. Jones with their permitting, and we've been together in, I think, the March 7th meeting. But I just wanted to say at the outset, if I ask any questions that are confusing or need to be repeated, please ask me to do so, or I will restate the question happily so that's something you can understand and respond to. So I know we're all getting a little bit goofy. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I will try to keep my questions somewhat tight. But I want to just start out at the outset with something Mr. Haney stated at the very outset, and I just want to get your perspective on this. He indicated that you would be testifying to provide some structure to the hearing examiner on this disorganized and hard to read code. Would you agree that the city's Shoreline Master Program is disorganized, hard to read for the layman, for the people who are the uninitiated?
I think it's a very challenging document to read, yes.
Okay, thank you. And I just want to kind of dive right in. You keep coming back to, oh, well, we wanted temporary measures required. Why is temporary required rather than the longer term repair that was recommended by Aspect Consulting in their January 6th, 2022 report that was ultimately submitted to the city?
Right. I think that gets particularly to the criteria in the emergency exemption language about the appropriate means to address the emergency situation.
Okay, that I think brings me to are you talking about the WAC 173-27040 sub 2 sub D?
Correct.
Okay, so can you look at that for me and just pull that up and tell me where in sub D it says anything about the abatement of the emergency must be done as a temporary measure?
So it says where new protective structures are deemed by the administrator to be appropriate means to address the emergency situation upon abatement of the emergency situation, the new structure shall be removed or any permit, which would have been required, right? Obtained. So abatement, right? Our goal is to abate the emergency and to do that consistent with the policies of the Master Program and the Management Act.
Okay, so you're reading temporary into that by virtue of the word abatement? Is that what I'm hearing?
So it's a combined reading of the whole, right? So we look at the SMP policies, right? And what do those allow? They allow permanent protection for primary structures. So the abatement of the emergency here is to find a long-term solution for the boathouse that is compliant with the SMP and the Shoreline Management Act policies.
So, okay, so I'm gonna dive back into this hard to explain document and try to get to the nut of this, because what I'm hearing is that repair versus replacement is really this seminal question, and that is going to determine what is approved. If this were a repair, if this were going to be treated just like Lipinski and Bianchi, would we be having this discussion? If the bulkhead had never tipped over, would we be having this discussion?
Yes, because I think the seminal issue, right, from those policies is the protection of primary structures.
Now, let me direct you back. So if this were just going to be a straight repair, mm-hmm. Somebody comes in, they want to fix their bulkhead up, it needs a 50% repair in order to retain it. They maybe want to do a hybrid, such as they did in Lipinski or in Bianchi that were mentioned earlier by Ms. Rodston. Just take me back to bulkhead is never tipped over.
Sorry. For my sake,
yes,
Ms. Thornburg, is the question you're working on right now related to someone coming in for an emergency or just an SSDP?
SSDP.
Not an emergency situation.
Not an emergency situation. Thank you for that clarification. So if someone comes in, just like Paul did on the 19th of October, and shows up at, you know, on Zoom with the city and says, hey, I want to take a look at my bulkhead. I've got this concrete bulkhead. And what was pitched to the city at that time and proposed was something similar to what had been done in two previous cases that were approved. I don't know if you're familiar with those, but you're not familiar with Lipinski or Bianchi.
No.
Okay. So let's just take them out of the equation. So we have a repair, someone coming in and saying, hey, I want to repair my bulkhead. The evaluation would not be this, is it going to protect a primary structure? The evaluation would be you can do up to a 50% repair. Isn't that true?
There are a number of factors that go into making that decision. And so to really answer your question, I would need to know all the facts of that case, of that site and the situation. So I can't give you a concrete answer to a hypothetical without all of those facts. And that's one of the main purposes for a pre-application meeting, is to suss out, right, the relevant facts to that particular case, then provide guidance on how the code applies. Okay. And along those lines, right, a pre-application meeting is required for all shore stabilization projects. And that's the benefit of that process.
Okay, let me, I'm going to just put that aside for a second. I think I need to get a little more specific with you. Is there a separate process for repair versus a replacement? Is there a separate set of criteria that apply, and what a person can do? If they fall under repair, they can do X. If they fall under replacement, they can do Y.
Yes.
Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Okay. So that really is a seminal question here. Is the Jones situation, when he came in October, was it going to be a repair or was it going to be a replacement? Isn't that true that when he came in on the 19th of October, that was what was being looked at?
So yes, there's a question of repair versus replacement in that original proposal. Absolutely. And so a reconfiguration of the bulkhead, not dissimilar with what is being proposed right now, with a pocket beach, regardless of whether it's hybrid with a line of last retreat in the in that pocket beach or not, that would be replacement.
Okay, so is the applicant entitled to disagree with the city at a later process? Say you do everything, you've submitted everything, you submit for your permit, and the city says that we're denying this. Does the applicant have the right to challenge that?
Absolutely. I mean, that's why we're here today. And that's why I'm
no, that's not why we're here today. I'm just going to ask you to answer just the question. We are here today because there's been a decision for an amendment that has been rejected. I'm talking about the after the fact process. And the after the fact process, doesn't an applicant have an opportunity to appeal that?
Yes, just like appealing this emergency amendment.
Okay, are we getting into premature determinations, trying to determine these questions even before an application has been submitted?
I'm sorry, what's the question?
Do you agree that it's premature to be getting into this level of analysis because there's no application actually pending before you for an SSDP?
So there's no application pending for a long-term permanent SSDP, that's correct. There is an application pending for the amendment that does require a decision, and the decision's based on the criteria, which we've documented.
Well, I think we're going to have to agree to disagree on that point. So I want to
My apologies.
I do want to ask you about the consultation on 1019. Today we hear about it being a consultation. Was it a pre-app? Was it a consultation? Do you think that matters to the applicant? Do you think the applicant knows the difference?
I think that I highly suspect that Allison Dennis.
I didn't ask that. I asked the applicant.
Well, collectively, they're the applicant, I suppose. If you want to be specific to Mr. Jones, I do not know the answer to that question.
Well, I guess generally in applicants, do you think that applicants care if there's a consultation or a pre-app? Do you think there's some distinction between these and just general applicants, citizens of Bainbridge Island who come in?
Well, I think there is a big difference between those things. And for someone who's experienced both. That's what I'm saying. For an applicant who's experienced both, I think they would understand that there's a big difference between those two things.
Oh, and you're saying you've been an applicant in the past? Is that your testimony? Well,
I don't think he said that at all.
I just okay. One I was sec. A little confused. Let's just stop for a second. My concern is ultimately, is there an argument that we treat regular folks different than experts and attorneys under the law? Because I think we all know that's not true. I think he's already testified to the fact that the SMP is a mess. I mean, I understand the point you're trying to make. I just don't know if we need to keep making it.
Okay, I will move on. Thank you.
Okay, let's move on. Great. And somebody needs to turn that off. Someone's got their notification. It's killing me.
Okay, sorry about that. I think it's on mine, but it's.
I think it is. I don't know
how to. My computer. I've turned it off on my phone, but it keeps coming up on my computer. So
can you? Do you have like a mute on your computer? Not muting you, but the volume from your computer?
I will. Can you still hear me?
Yep.
I can't. Can you say something? I don't think I can hear you.
You can't hear me now?
I can't hear you. So right. Okay. I will just.
We'll work on that tech issue for next time. It really is okay. A challenge, I'll be honest.
Okay. Yes. Okay. And I understand it's distracting. Absolutely. Okay. So I'm going to turn to the pre-app meeting, or I'm sorry, the consultation on 1019. Pardon me. So there was this consultation, you're calling it now. It wasn't a pre-app. What is the goal that the department is trying to achieve with this consultation?
Well, the purpose of a consultation is to be responsive to applicants' questions, specifically under code. And it's Municipal Code Chapter 2, 16020 sub H is our section on consultations.
Let me just ask you this. Do you understand that applicants will make decisions based on interactions with the city and based on interactions and statements made at these meetings?
Yes.
Okay. And it may involve entering into contracts for work as required for a future project. Do you appreciate that? Do you understand that that might happen?
Sure.
Okay. And at this particular meeting, you've already indicated Ms. Dennison and Ms. Rotston were there, and I'm assuming you knew both of them prior to this meeting. Is that correct?
Correct.
Are they regular attendees in the city for different clients?
Yes.
Okay. And have you worked with either of them between your first tenure at the city between 2000 and 2009? Or is it just more recent since you've been employed in February 2020?
So Jenny Rotston and I worked together previously when I was at the city.
Okay. What about Ms. Dennison?
No.
Okay. But since February of 2020, when you began at the city, you have met with both of them in meetings?
Yes.
Okay. So you're aware that information that is shared at these meetings, you've already said, is you know, there are experts there, they're listening for different things to advise their clients. You would agree with that?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to turn to the pre-op letter, which you've indicated that the pre-op meeting was actually the site visit on November 30th at the scene of the failed bulkhead that's tipped over now and resting on the shoreline. So I just want to understand that this letter was issued, it was sent after the emergency shoreline exemption was issued, correct?
Correct.
So I want to ask you if you received any kind of communication around that same time, I want to say December 1st, referencing wanting to discuss a permanent or long-term fix.
I'm not sure.
Can we turn to, if you have it before you, I believe it's attachment 4, C1, attachment 4. And if you go to the very bottom, which is the emails between you that were sent in advance of your pre-op letter.
Okay.
And page 10.
Yes.
Okay. And if you can scroll onto page 9.
Okay.
And if you could review those, did you see that Ms. Rothston is expressing an interest in submitting for a long-term fix?
Yes, for me, that's page 10. Mm-hmm. I look forward to further discussion regarding the permanent fix.
Okay, so you were aware that this was in their thinking, and yet you've been focused on a temporary.
I was aware that that was in their thinking, and all of my communications to them was that the city believes a temporary measure would be consistent and allowable under the provisions, applicable provisions.
Okay, so I'm going to have you scroll up to page 9 of that same exhibit.
Yep.
And it's the email from Nam Su, and he states, he indicates that he would sure like to get that, being the bulkhead, off the beach ASAP, as that is an area that has surf smelt spawning, and it is spawning season. You've had earlier testimony that it isn't. Which one is right?
That it is not, and that has been confirmed with NAM by me via email, as well as Fish and Wildlife Online Maps. So he does confirm to me. I did follow up on that issue to make sure that, you know, which was correct. And okay. He confirmed that it is not a documented forage fish spawning beach.
And to clarify, that's not anything in the record, correct? That's just you testifying to what he told you in your situation. Is that right, Mr. Best?
Yes, I have an email thread that can document that. But I am testifying that we had that conversation and confirmed that it's not a forage fish spawning beach.
Got it. Okay. Sorry, Ms. Thornburg, go ahead.
Yeah, no problem. In your 12-2 pre-op letter, you indicate that it's a fast-moving fluid situation. So it's not as comprehensive as it would normally be. However, it's an 8-page letter or on email. How many pages or how much more comprehensive are your typical pre-op letters?
Just guessing, probably about 15 to 20 pages.
Okay. All right, so I have another question for you. You indicate in the very first page, if you want to scroll up to it, attachment 4 again of C1, okay, to concisely answer your question regarding 50% repair. 50% repair is not allowed because, and then you cite to the SMP, does not apply to the current situation on the property. What did you mean by current situation?
So that speaks to what I've testified previously to, section 6.2.7 sub 2, in that there are two provisions in there, one of which is that.
Let me just ask you this. Is the
current situation. Mr. Alexander, if I can break in a moment, you know, she's not allowing the witness to answer questions. I mean, I understand that she wants to clarify her question when he begins to answer, but it would be nice if he could answer the questions that she's
understood. Had. And that said, you know, was the question, what is the current situation? Was that the question?
Yes, I said, what did you mean by current situation?
Okay, and then let's let him answer.
Thank you.
Okay.
So what I mean is that section of code, which has two criteria relative to repair, right? And the question I'm responding to in that email pre-app letter is specifically about 50% repair, is to say that that rule doesn't apply to the situation. And as I've previously testified, because under 6.2.7.2a, the existing shoreline stabilization, being the concrete wall, no longer adequately serves its intended purpose.
Okay.
And secondly, it's a replacement of more than 50% of the bulkhead. So that's the context.
The current situation, the question I had, and let me just ask it again.
Well, maybe ask it.
Clarify.
Maybe ask it differently because.
Shall do.
Okay.
The current situation, is it not the bulkhead tipping over? Isn't that the current situation that you're talking about, that it's now tipped over?
Yes, because I was out there on site at 11:30 and the bulkhead had fallen over. So this letter, you know.
Is that what you meant?
What I'm trying to get to, Peter.
Ms. Thornburg, you gotta let him. I'm gonna interrupt.
I am actually trying to ask a very specific question, and it's not, you know, supposed to be this ongoing question. It's really, what is the current situation? Is it that the bulkhead fell over? And that's a yes or no answer.
He just said yes.
Okay. Well, then can I move on to my next question?
Did I miss it, Mr. Best? I thought you said
the current
situation referenced there involves the bulkhead failed. Right.
As of December 2nd, the current situation was the bulkhead had failed.
Okay, excellent.
Thank you. So in consultations, is it your practice to review code requirements that don't apply to an applicant's project or won't apply?
It really depends on the nature of the consultation and how conceptual they are and what their questions are. Consultations are really a free-flowing meeting.
And did this one last longer than the half an hour you indicated? They are typical?
Not that I recall. It's not uncommon for them to go a little bit longer, but I don't remember specifically for this one.
Was it recorded by any chance?
No, there's no record of these meetings.
And this was more than just a conceptual meeting. They had an actual plan they presented, isn't that right?
They had two conceptual drawings that were representative of different projects that they had done elsewhere. So it wasn't, none of the drawings that I recall were specific to Mr. Jones's property.
So if I understood your testimony correctly, it's that you went over the four bullet points listed in the decision under the findings. You're approximately 90% sure, is that correct?
I know we discussed more than that, but I did hit those points, and that was relevant to the findings of the decision, which is why they're stated in the decision.
Is this something that you have no record of the meeting? It was in October, and yet you're 90% sure that you said those things? Is that your testimony?
I am quite certain that I said those things.
Do you want to assign a percentage to it? It's 90%.
I think you just said 90%. Already done that. But
yeah.
All right, I'll move along, Your Honor.
Thank you. I do recognize people have different memories of that meeting.
So turning to the code analysis, which is exhibit A10 and is also an exhibit contained in the city's exhibits as well. I wanted to ask you about the code analysis that was prepared, I understand, by you for the most part. So what contribution did Mr. Hoffman make?
I don't recall specifically, but he did have editorial input.
In what parts? The decision portion?
In the formatting of the document, to the organization of the criteria, to the staff analysis. And we had discussions back and forth about those things and whether some of them led to the conclusion. Right. So he read it in detail, had feedback on both the substance and the format. And I don't recall exactly which criteria we spoke about, but we did speak about the conclusion for certain criteria.
Okay. So you emailed this code analysis to Ms. Rotston on February 11th, correct?
I believe so.
Do you recall when you began drafting this code analysis?
No, at this point I do not.
I'm going to ask you to turn to exhibit A10, if you have that available to you.
I do. Take me a moment. Oh, yep.
I'm okay, there. Sure. And these are a series of emails between you and Ms. Rotston dating from January 31st, which is the third page. And is it fair to say Ms. Rotston's trying to determine what you need? Is that correct?
Let me see here. Yes, that's my understanding.
Okay, and then she sent you a follow-up email on February 2nd.
Yes.
Okay, and then looks like you wrote her back on February 2nd with is this a complete list of what you needed?
So we did speak by phone, this is where, as Ms. Rotston testified, we were trying to understand, should we have a whole new emergency authorization application or process this as an amendment? There's a basic procedural question. So we did get that clarified. And so then this was the follow-up based on our conversation. I understood what materials they had, that they had the geotech report, that they had the Fish and Wildlife permit, that they might have the Army Corps. This was a select set of submittal items based on what I knew they had available for the emergency review. It's not a complete application for a non-emergency permit.
But this is what you were asking for the exemption?
Yes. Yes, for the amendment.
And I think we've covered this, but you were treating it as an amendment rather than an entirely new application, correct?
Correct.
And were you aware at this point of what Ms. Rotston or the applicant was proposing as a long-term fix?
Yes, we had discussed that by phone. And I believe she had sent me ahead of this a drawing.
So your list in this email looks like you had approved it in principle at this point, and we're just waiting on the information identified to formalize it. Wouldn't you agree?
That I did what in principle?
Could this be taken? Your list looks like it had approved the idea in principle at this point, and you were just waiting on this information that you've identified in your email to approve it.
No.
Formalize it.
No, I don't think that this says that at all.
You don't think that could give an impression to Ms. Rotston of that at all?
No. I mean, I work with Ms. Roston regularly, and we talk very often about submittal requirements. And I think it's very well understood between the two of us that submittal items is what's needed to do the review, not indicative of what a decision would be.
But you've heard her testimony here today, isn't that right?
Yes, I did.
And she indicated that that gave her a green light. Did you not hear that?
I'm not sure I heard that when specific to this email, but I did hear that she had an impression about review.
Okay. You indicated that you sought input from others in your department. Did you seek input from Mr. Greetham, Dave Greetham?
Yes.
And he's no longer with the city?
That's correct. He's retired.
And Mr. Hoffman, you sought input from Mr. Hoffman, you indicated, and he's no longer with the city.
That's correct. His interim term is over.
And do you know the duration of that interim term?
I want to say November the middle of May.
So essentially the Jones situation, it sounds like.
Yes.
Okay. So I just wanted to ask you a bit about your background and work at the history at the city. So how many emergency shoreline exemption applications have you personally considered as a planner for the city?
Not sure I could put a specific number to that. Over the course of my 12, 13 years working at the city.
Let's limit it to just recent, February 2020, your most recent.
Sure. Three or four in the last 2 years.
How many of those were approved?
Three.
And is one still pending or has it been denied?
Denied.
And on what basis?
It's the Jones.
Oh, all right. Thank you for clarifying that. Do you understand the difference or is there a difference between an application for an emergency shoreline exemption and the SSDP we've been talking about where there is not an emergency?
Yes. I mean, submittal items, you know, we make a decision based on the information we have available in the time that's necessary for the emergency. So for each emergency, that's going to be different. Some provide very comprehensive submittal items. Others are, you know, sometimes back of a napkin type of approaches. Which I would say the first exemption that we approved for Jones was, you know, the contractor saying, this is what I think will work out on the site this week. And we agreed to that on site.
And the duration of that was meant to be, I believe you testified a couple of weeks or a bit longer.
That's what the applicant was thinking.
Okay. And can you look at the, for an emergency process, would you agree that it's 173-27-0402D of the WAC that is the controlling language?
Right.
Okay. If you could look at that for me and identify where it limits the purpose for which emergency construction can be sought, does it require in that WAC approval where there is landfill or other accessory structures? Doesn't it state emergency construction necessary to protect property from damage by the elements?
It says an emergency is an unanticipated and imminent threat to public health, safety, or the environment.
Are there limitations in that sentence? Where are they?
In that specific sentence, I think what I just read states limitations, right? That those are the things that emergencies are allowed for, that define emergencies.
Okay. So it would be to protect those items, including the environment. You would agree?
I would describe it as abating the risk to public health, safety, and the environment.
Okay. And where does it state in this section that it has to be temporary or up to a year long solution?
And you already asked
section that earlier. Asked and answered.
I just trying to get our time going. He already answered it.
Been there, done that. Okay, I'll move right along. Do you agree that the WAC, this section, has clearly created an assumption of the risk condition? In other words, if the applicant puts in the structure to abate the emergency and it isn't later permitted, the applicant is 100% responsible to remove it?
Yes.
Is it the policy or practice of Bainbridge Island to combine review for emergency shoreline exemption with an after-the-fact permit? Or do you see these as two separate processes?
Not sure I understand your question.
Let me re-ask that. So is it the practice of Bainbridge Island to combine review of an emergency shoreline exemption and at the same time require that an after-the-fact permit be reviewed? And one is the emergency permit is contingent upon the after-the-fact permit being approved.
So what we offered to the, I'm going to answer your question with a scenario, I guess, so that hopefully it's clear what our practice is. Like with the Jones application, we process an emergency, right? And we expect if there is an after the fact element that needs to be addressed, we expect that application to be coming in as soon as possible. It is possible, and I have an emergency recently that was approved where both are submitted. And because it's a time too short to make a decision on the permanent application, we processed at the same time the emergency authorization, approved the emergency authorization, and then they began work, and we worked and are still going through the process of the long-term permanent application review. So I don't know if that is your question, but yes, we simultaneously review emergencies and regular applications. And that the quicker that both of those things can happen, the better.
But you don't think that's required under the WAC, do you?
What I think is required is if there is an after the fact work that needs to be permitted, that it says upon abatement of an emergency, right, that any permit that was required will be obtained. So there's not a specific time frame to that, but I think it's pretty clear that it's needs to be timely.
Do you agree that the emergency here on the Jones property has not yet been abated?
I do agree with that.
So I do want to ask you about...
I want to revise my answer to that. So I think that what was seen as an extremely temporary measure, the filter fabric and the sandbags, have performed above and beyond anyone's expectations. And so I guess, honestly, I think that the emergency has substantially been abated, but I recognize that there could be events where that particular limited measure may not be enough. And so that's why I think the city could support more additional temporary measures. But I do think that what has been installed has substantially contributed to abating the emergency.
And I guess this comes back to the structure that remains on the beach and the tow being protected. Do you think that structure is lending to the bank remaining without much change, as you've observed? since you went out on May 24th.
Yeah, I would agree with the testimony we've heard that it is contributing. Absolutely.
And your expert, I believe, recommended not removing that during any temporary sandbagging that may have been reviewed or examined by them.
Yes, that's true.
So the on the 24th, did you lift up the filter fabric to take a look below and see what the cracks, the tension cracks, the soil below looked like?
No, I didn't.
Excuse me, 24th of what? Where did we just go?
May 24th, there was a site visit. Oh. The expert witness, Mr. Johansson, went to the site. Mr.
Sure. And that said, I believe when Mr. Haney went down the May 24th path, I very rudely cut Mr. Best off and essentially said, I don't care. So same.
Okay.
Same there, to the extent that, you know.
The important question is, does his expert agree that the toe is being protected by the bulkhead? And he's answered that.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah. I'll move on.
Thank you.
I do want to ask you, so isn't it true that a structure could not go back in that exact location where the 140-foot bulkhead that's now tipped over is at, was at? Is there any scenario you see where something could go in that exact location, given current conditions?
In the exact location where the concrete bulkhead?
Yes.
Is there any scenario? Sorry, just make sure I understand your question. Is there any scenario in which
let me restate it. Isn't it true that a structure could not go back in that exact location under the code?
I need to understand the whole facts of the scenario in order to answer that question, because it really is fact dependent.
Is the city allowing concrete slab bulkheads to be installed on its shorelines at this time?
No. Flat-faced, hard bulkheads are prohibited.
Okay. And on the northern end of the Jones property, isn't there a wing wall that goes back at least 10 feet that's existing that remains there?
There is a concrete wing wall there, yes.
Okay. And isn't this protecting the neighboring property that could be at risk as well?
It is providing that function now that the face of the bulkhead has failed, but that was not, I don't think that was the function of it when it was built. And that was not the function it was providing when the bulkhead was standing.
So the wing wall on the northern end is not new. It's been there, correct?
The concrete wing wall, yes.
Correct. So if the bulkhead were less than 140 foot in length, if it were only 50 feet as proposed in the drawings and the site plan presented, then wouldn't a wing wall be necessary as a return so that the fill doesn't pour out of it? As a structural element?
As a general design concept, yes.
And would you agree that a series of two or more construction projects on the shoreline will potentially negatively impact the environment more than one project would?
Well, I think it really depends. So Jim Johannesson, I heard, speak to this as well. So it really depends on the nature of what the construction is, where in the environment it is, what it's building or removing, and what the long-term permanent footprint of that is, right? If the construction is for temporary measures that are removed, and then the shoreline functions naturally after that point, then I would say the answer is no. So it really depends.
So isn't it true that fish and wildlife want the concrete wall off the beach?
Yes, so does the city.
The city's own expert came in and said it needs to stay.
Temporarily.
So again, I'm confused where this temporary is coming from. Is this in the code? I'm sorry, is this in the WAC that applies to this?
Asked and answered.
Yes, objection. I sustain that objection.
Okay. I'm going to move on to just asking you a few questions about third-party review. So at the point of March 14th, would you agree you had not contacted any firm to conduct third-party review prior to issuing the city's decision?
On March 14th, I'm not sure. I was reaching out to firms to see availability. I'm not certain whether I started that before March 14th or not.
Were you aware of engineers the city already had under contract?
I'm aware of our geotechnical third-party review firms.
Okay, and I've included as exhibit A16 Wood and Associates. Are you familiar with them?
No, not specifically.
I've also included as exhibit A17 Associated Earth Sciences. Are you familiar with that firm?
I have heard that firm for third-party reviews, yes.
And exhibit A18 is Aspect, of course, and I assume you did not reach out to them for third-party review of their own proposal, but did you reach out to Associated Earth Sciences, do you recall?
No, I did not.
Were you the only one reaching out for a third-party review from the city?
I believe so, yes.
Well, do you recall when you contacted Mr. Johansson? Was it after the decision had been issued?
I do not recall.
Was it after this appeal had been filed on March 25th?
I don't recall.
Mr. Johansson testified it was April. Does that sound consistent?
That may be. I don't recall.
Okay, who outlined the scope of work with Mr. Johansson?
Myself in consultation with Paul Nyland and Dave Greetham and Director with Mark Hoffman.
So all of you had a meeting with Mr. Johansson, or was there just a drawing up of a scope of work?
In the city attorney's office. There was a drafting up of a scope of work. That entire group did not meet with Mr. Johansson.
Okay. Who did meet with Mr. Johansson?
I met with Mr. Johansson. And then, then we met after he was on contract to discuss his scope.
So the scope of, if I understand this, the scope of work was drafted by the group you've mentioned, mm-hmm. And was it in writing?
Yes, it's attached to the contract. And then once he was under contract, there was a specific narrowed scope of work defined.
By whom?
By that group that I spoke of and Mr. Haney.
You've read his report, and I'm going to ask you if that report prepared addressed the scope of work that was identified.
Yes.
Was the sandbag revetment proposed in the scope of work?
I would have to go back and look. I don't think it was written as a specific item in the scope of work.
Did you advise Mr. Johansson to limit his review or his design to a temporary one?
I'm trying to recall. What I recall is asking him to determine if there were, or to identify if there were feasible temporary measures, and to review the rock bulkhead and the geotechnical report that Aspect had produced. So we didn't limit him to the sandbag revetment.
But you advised him, well, let me ask you this. Did you tell him of a time horizon? Did you suggest the 1 year?
The 1 to 2 years was my recollection, and that came, that time frame comes out of, I can't remember exactly where, but in the record there's discussion about, you know, we need 1 to 2 years to potentially finish all the permitting and do the construction of whatever the long-term fix is.
Was that your, I guess my question is, did you tell him that? Did you give him that time parameter? Or someone from the city?
Yeah, I mean, the objective was a temporary measure while the permitting and final, whatever the final solution is, could be constructed. Right? And one thing I remember from the record, and I'm sorry, I don't remember more specifically, but one thing I remember is that the applicant had advised that contractors to do any work on the boathouse might need to be scheduled, a timeout in the future. So I know there's something to that effect in the record.
When you say the record, can you be more clear? Are you talking the testimony during this hearing, or are you talking some documents that have been submitted?
I believe that is in the attachments to the decision document. So I would suspect that it's in attachment 8, or the or maybe the geotech report. So, sorry, I can't be more specific about that.
No, that was my question. Is it testimony or is it records? You've answered it. Thank you. Assuming this proposed fix went in, the proposed fix.
Who's proposed?
Let me clarify that. Getting lost in my own questions here. Let me just strike that. I'm going to move on to another question. Did you ask his firm to analyze, and but when I say his, Mr. Johannesson, to analyze or critique the design and report submitted by Aspect on 1-6-2022?
I believe we asked him to review the report and determine if, you know, the assumptions are, you know, do a professional peer review of the assumptions made in the report, and to review the design as to whether that is the minimum necessary to protect the boathouse while we do the permanent fix, the permitting for the permanent fix.
Okay. And has the sandbag proposal contained in the CGS report been reviewed by Fish and Wildlife, to your knowledge?
Yes, I believe so. I shared it with Nam Su at Fish and Wildlife.
Did you receive any feedback?
Let me see. I have the email open here. The only feedback I got was that, thank you for the additional information. This is something we will take into consideration.
Did you share this communication that you've had with Nam Su with the applicant?
No.
And sorry, just so I understand, in terms of the time frame, are we now bogged down in everything that happened after the March 14th denial, and we're we're spinning out the Johansson report, and now it's getting provided to Nam Su, who's not here, and now Mr. Best is testifying to an email he's reading. Is that where we're going right now?
Could you give us the date of that email?
Absolutely. So the timestamp on this is May 31st.
So the answer is yes, Your Honor, and I won't ask any further questions on this.
Look, you had in advance of the hearing requested that I disallow any information after March 14th in a way, and I didn't rule in your favor, but I also, you know, would like to stress again that the amount of relevance or the level of relevance for me, I will tip my hand. I'm going to care a lot more about March 14th and before than everything after. So that's me tipping my hand on where to focus things. So thank you. Go ahead.
I'm going to turn back to February 3rd when you were detailing your list of items to provide to the city. Did you request an alternatives analysis pursuant to the SMP and the city code at that time?
So I understood from the conversations with Ms. Rothstein that there was an alternatives analysis in the geotechnical report.
And you provided that report sometime in January 19th, I believe. Isn't that accurate?
I don't recall exactly when I was provided that report, but it was submitted with those application materials.
Wasn't it submitted to you with the HPA that was approved by Mr. Su, the HPA in January 19th?
I don't recall if he provided. You're saying if he provided it to me?
Nope. If you were provided it by Ms. Rothstein when she communicated with you on the 19th, advising you that the HPA had been approved by the state.
So I don't recall specifically, but I got, I think all at the same time, or maybe within a day or two, all of the application materials. She was very timely in providing those. In our permitting database, I have the date stamps February 3rd as far as when the submittals were entered into the system. I may have received that a little bit earlier than that via email.
Okay, all right. Did you request alternatives analysis in the code analysis you sent on February 11th?
So on February 11th, let's see here. Yes.
So just to be clear, it's your testimony you requested an alternatives analysis on February 11th of the applicant, when germane to the city code?
I was asking for an analysis of temporary measures, offering one suggestion, and happy to accept other alternatives.
But it was not a specific request for the alternatives analysis under the SMP.
It was, the intention was that it was under that. If I didn't spell that out specifically, that was an oversight in trying to deal with this as quickly as possible.
Did you exchange emails with Ms. Dennison on February 11th? Do you recall?
I do recall having some emails around this time.
I'm going to direct you to Exhibit A11.
Okay.
I'm sorry, A12.
Okay. Let me get there.
And just for the record, I think this is also attachment 7, if I'm not misunderstanding, to the city's decision, C1, which has an email exchange between Ms. Roadston and Mr. Best on February 11th.
Yeah. I think these might be different. That one in your packet says between Peter Best and Jenny Roadston. I'm talking about the exchange between Peter Best and Allison Dennison. From that same date. And it's exhibit A12.
A12, okay. I'm docking Mr. Haney a being helpful point. He's far behind Ms. Thornburg, who helped us with her screen sharing earlier, but that's okay. There's still a lot of time left in the game. Go ahead with your question.
Do you recall receiving that email delivered 3:01 p.m. on February 11th?
Yes.
And in that, doesn't Ms. Dennison advise you that as the licensed engineer, and as Mr. Anderson is the licensed professional engineer, they provide a professional opinion to you, which is essentially an analysis of the sandbag revetment that you had provided.
I don't see this as an analysis of the sandbag revetment.
Okay, but you received that, and that was in response to the sandbag revetment, correct?
Yes.
And then if I could direct you to A13, sent on February 14th as a follow-up, did you receive that? It's dated February 14th, Monday, 8:06 p.m.
Yes.
And that contains more information about the sandbag revetment and feedback to you. Is that correct?
Yes, it does.
And at any time, did you write her back and ask for a complete SMP 6.2.8 analysis, alternatives analysis under the city code?
What I recall, and I can't put my finger on the exact email, but I do recall telling her that the alternatives analysis was missing some things, right? And I guess on the side, expressing frustration that there was no coordination with the city about our alternatives analysis at the same time that they were actively engaged with Fish and Wildlife about alternatives analysis under the RCW. So that there were holes in the alternatives analysis we wanted them to look at temporary measures. So I can't put my finger on that exact email, but I do remember having a conversation, I think via email, with her.
And you didn't feel like her emails on February 11th and February 14th were adequate?
No, February 14th does provide more information, but it's doesn't provide that in the context of, you know, the coastal environment there. You know, it's not much of an analysis.
I'm going to move on to a couple of questions about concrete bulkheads. Have you ever had, or has it ever come before you, a concrete slab bulkhead that tipped over while you've been working for the city of Bainbridge Island?
This is the first.
Have you ever had to determine whether repair or replacement applies in this instance being one of a concrete slab bulkhead tipping over?
Since I've never had one of those, I've never had to make that decision before. Yeah, I do make decisions about repair and replacement a lot for bulkheads. and not that specific situation.
So would you agree that the question for final approval of a permit in a full SSDE process for Mr. Jones will come down to whether this is a repair or a replacement? This is really the question that needs to be answered. I know you believe you already answered this, but is this the question that will have a bearing on the outcome?
That has an influence on some of the criteria as considered in my code analysis, but it's not the biggest question. I mean, there's a whole bunch of questions that go into making a decision on that, and that's not the biggest question.
Let me turn, I think it's the code analysis. Let me just take a moment to take a quick look. So turning to your code analysis, which in my exhibits is A5. And I believe it's also a city exhibit, but it's A5 in my exhibits. And
attachment 10 to the amendment decision.
All right, thank you. So what I have here, the very first question that you pose in this code analysis is the project a repair? So isn't that one of the seminal questions that needs to be answered?
It is a important question, but I don't think it is the seminal question. One of the main reasons that question is in here is because the applicants kept asking us about repair versus replacement and the 50% rule. So we were trying to provide a more thorough answer to that question, but it is relevant to the policies that we had to review and make a decision on under the emergency exemption.
Okay.
So it has relevance, but it's not the seminal question.
There are only two questions in your code analysis as I see it. There is this a repair? And does the project qualify under an emergency exemption? Do you agree?
Those are two headings within it. I would say each row in that criteria analysis is a question in and of itself.
Oh. All right. And then we may have covered this, but is this decision that you, standing in the shoes of the city, that an applicant has a right to disagree with you on this determination?
I think he's already answered that.
Yeah, let's move past that. We're really running out of time. I'm really starting to get nervous.
Yeah, I just have to say I have a hard stop at 4:55, like I said, and this is Mr. Best's only time to be here.
That was my final question. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Haney.
I'll try to be brief.
And real quick, question for you, Mr. Haney. Do I care, should I care what Mr. Best's ideas or interpretation of the law are? I mean, am I required to give deference to Mr. Best's view of the law in your mind?
You are certainly required to give deference to Mr. Best's view of the SMP, which is, of course, the law, because he and the city staff are the administrators of that document. Whether you're required to give him deference on the WAC, I think, the WAC speaks for itself, and you can take his opinion as someone who works with it for what you wish to do.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Best, I'll try to keep this as short as I can. When asked about the WAC and whether it says temporary or abatement, you referred to 2B. Why did you WAC 173-27-0402B? Why did you think that was important?
because those are all of the provisions under subsection one are the rules for applying and interpreting the exemptions. So regardless of which exemption you look at under subsection two, you have to review them based on the guidance or the requirements of subsection one.
And I believe I misspoke. I referred to it as 2B, but it's actually 1B. Is that 1B. Correct?
Yes, correct.
Now, Ms. Thornburg asked you a number of questions about combining the permanent review of the permanent application with review of the temporary emergency exemption. Do you believe you did that under the circumstances, combined those two reviews?
No, not in the decision or the review for the amendment. I frankly wish that they had submitted the application requested in condition number five. And while that regular permitting process was underway, they could have requested this amendment simultaneously, but they have not moved forward with any of the long-term permanent applications.
And when your analysis of the code sets forth the policies of the SMP, are you looking at those as policies that apply only to the permanent or shoreline substantial development permit, or are you looking at those policies as applying to the emergency exemption?
To both. I could put my finger on it, but to paraphrase, right, all development within the shorelines must be consistent with the Shoreline Management Act and the Shoreline Master Program.
Including the emergency construction, isn't that right?
Correct.
So the policies you're citing here apply to the emergency construction, not just to the permanent fix, correct?
Absolutely.
Now, the conclusions in your report, those are your conclusions in the decision, correct?
I drafted them. Others had editorial contributions.
Did all of those who contributed, did they all agree ultimately on the decision that was issued?
Yes.
Now, there was some discussion about email exchange between you and Ms. Roadston on February 2nd, and I believe there was a reference to Exhibit A10 and an email exchange there. Is there anything in that email exchange in which you told Ms. Roadston that the city was prepared to approve the proposed rock bulkhead?
No.
Is there anything in those emails from which Ms. Roadston, in your opinion, could draw the conclusion that you were going to approve the rock bulkhead?
I don't believe so, and that clearly was not my intent.
You said that you had had experience with emergency exemptions, three or four in the last 2 years, but you've also had experience prior to that with emergency exemptions, haven't you?
Yes.
And I realize you were struggling a little bit with the number, but would it be more than 10 over the course of your time as a shoreline planner?
Yes, I'm certain of that.
And again, you mentioned, or you said you were not familiar with the Lipinski or the Bianchi permits, correct?
Correct. I've heard the name Lipinski, but I'm not familiar with the design or the process.
And there's no evidence in the record of whether those permits related to the protection of primary structures or appurtenances, is there?
Not in the record for the Jones project.
So no one has testified regarding that.
Not to my knowledge, no.
And you're not familiar with whether they were for for primary structures or for things like boathouses?
No, I do not.
In your time with the Bainbridge Island Planning Department, has the department approved bulkheads to protect secondary type of structures or non-primary structures like a boathouse?
Not to my knowledge.
Now, you talked a little bit about the structure not going back, the concrete bulkhead not going back in its exact location. And I believe you agreed with Ms. Thornburg that the city would not allow a concrete bulkhead, a flat-faced concrete bulkhead at the present time. Is that correct?
Correct.
But I'd like to ask you, is the wing wall that extends 20 feet from the rock end of the rock bulkhead, is that in the exact location where the concrete bulkhead was?
No, it's not.
And what about the wing wall on the north? Is that a new rock wing wall?
So I think people could debate that. I believe it's a new structure performing a very different function than the previous wing wall that was there.
And the previous wing wall, the concrete wing wall, that remains, correct?
Correct.
So I believe he went through the site plan. Ms. Thornburg put it up on the screen. I feel like we've gone over all this.
Okay. Let me then turn to additional points. Ms. Thornburg referred to a design of the design that was developed by Mr. Johannesson and testified to. Was the sand bag or geo bag and textile option set forth in Johannesson report a design, in your opinion?
No, I don't think it was a design to the degree of someone constructing something, right? And we heard Mr. Chen testify about his stamping, right? He'd only stamped the final design. So I believe I heard Mr. Johannesson describe it as a conceptual design, which is very common.
Okay. Now, you also talked about Exhibit A12 and Ms. Dennison's emails about her evaluation of the sandbag or geobag and textile revetment. You said you didn't see that as an analysis. What about it was inadequate, or why didn't you see that as an analysis that fulfilled what you were looking for?
Yeah, so I had provided a copy of the Army Corps engineering guidance, which has a range of information in there, including stuff, right, for engineers, formulas and analysis of performance of certain structures and different wave climates and so forth. And one of my specific questions to her was, why specifically wouldn't this work in Manzanita Bay, which has a low wave energy environment? I even attached a graphic showing different wave energy classifications around the island. If it would work in Alaska, why wouldn't it work in Manzanita Bay? And even saying, you know, looking at this engineering guidance, it looks like you might even be able to downscale the size of the bags potentially. The Army Corps provides guidance about even a steeper slope might be feasible, right? And I'm not the engineer, but I'm smart enough to read this and realize that there are really relevant questions to ask her to respond to. And she was not responding to that, and you know, didn't provide the comparable kind of context that she provided in the original geotechnical report relative to the, you know, coastal conditions and so forth of the site and whether it would be, you know, suitable.
Other than the sandbag revetment, which you asked her about, did she provide you with any other potential alternatives to the proposed rock bulkhead and any analysis of those alternatives?
Not to my request. Her geotechnical report does include some very brief analysis of alternatives for fish and wildlife, but I asked her to fill in some gaps, and I did not get any other additional alternative ideas from her.
You also said in your testimony that with respect to the your code analysis, that the repair versus replacement was an important question, but not the seminal question or the most important question. Or I believe you said, quote, not the biggest question, unquote. Can you tell me what you believe the biggest question or most important question is?
Well, the biggest question, and trying to think of like the logical sequence of how all the provisions of the SMP, you know, line up, the biggest question in those policies that are referenced, there are three policies that referenced the requirement to demonstrate need to protect a primary structure like a house or a primary appurtenance. So that to me is the biggest question in the review process. It's not the only one, but it's the biggest. Okay.
Just checking my notes here. In the interest of brevity, I think I'll say that's all my cross or my redirect.
Thank you. And Mr. Best, did you attend law school out of curiosity? I appreciate your ability to often say, it depends. There were quite a few, it depends, just no. No need to answer that. We really appreciate your time. I believe Mr. Best is unavailable when we come back, as well as Ms. Rodston. So these witnesses, I assume, can be excused. Does that track with what the attorneys were hoping?
Yes, from my perspective.
Ms. Warner? From the appellant. Yes.
Excellent. Okay. Well, Mr. Best, Ms. Rodston, thank you so much for taking the time to answer everybody's questions and put up with my ridiculous snark. Truly appreciate it. With that, I was thinking we only have a few minutes left. Rather than dive in, I would like to get some thoughts from our attorneys. Aisha, we have two witnesses left, Allison Dennison, and the other would be Mr. Paul Nyland. And let's see, whose witness is whose? I'm already forgetting. Or are they both? I think both your witnesses, the appellant, intended to be called by the appellant. Is that accurate, Ms. Thornburg?
Yes, and that is if the state is not going to be calling Mr. Nyland. So,
I have thought about calling Mr. Nyland. I will do that if, as long as he's going to be called, I'll call him as a witness. I don't expect my direct testimony from Mr. Nyland to take very long, but I don't know how much cross-examination Ms. Thornburg has.
Actually, this will be handled by Ms. Marshall.
Okay. Hi, Ms. Marshall. We haven't heard from you. You're here.
Yes, I know. Piper got the laboring oar today. I guess she drew the short straw. But yeah, thank you. Thank you for asking. And yeah, I do have some questions for Mr. Nyland, but I don't believe that it will be to the extent that Mr. Best was questioned today.
Sure. I guess what I was thinking was I too have the sense, based on the record, that Ms. Dennison would likely take a bit longer to be questioned than Mr. Nyland. You know, I've set aside, I think, 4 hours, 9 to 1 o'clock on the 24th. Does that track with what the other parties?
Yes, okay. I have that time set aside, Your Honor.
You don't have to give me an answer now, but I would suggest that the attorneys collaboratively think about how, if I were to limit the rest of what I'm going to hear to 4 hours, if I just don't have any more time in the world beyond the 4 hours, day three, by the way, if you had to split it up, how would you do it? I don't need closing arguments. I'm going to tell you right now, closing arguments are going to be something that can be produced in briefs. I would like, 15 minutes at the very end for me to ask any pressing questions of the attorneys that I may wish to ask in advance of you all going to produce briefs or whatnot. So essentially with a break, one short break, let's say there's 3.5 hours total of time. I would like some plan as to, okay, we're going to hear from Mr. Nyland first, and we're going to, this side is going to, each side gets 15 minutes, I guess, if he's on both their witness lists, right? I'm not giving you the answer, but if you all can collaboratively kind of try to come up with a plan that I can sort of force us to stick to, that might end up being helpful. Does that make sense? I'm not trying to be, I'm not trying to limit anyone's case. If worst comes to worst, there's always other options, but, I'm just trying to make sure everything gets done that needs to get done. Any thoughts on sort of how to break it up, or if that makes sense, Ms. Marshall?
Sure. I'll jump in, Your Honor. Thank you. Although we did have Mr. Nyland on our witness list, we don't need to call him. Obviously, we can get out what we're looking to ask him on cross-examination. And, my rough estimate is, I would be surprised if it would take more than 30 minutes for me to cross-examine him. But of course, that would depend on the questions that Mr. Haney asks. So, just from my best guess.
Well, and I will say in response, I will remind, as the examiner has said, that attorneys are notoriously bad estimators of time with respect to this. But I can't imagine, looking at the questions I have for Mr. Nyland, that I'm going to take more than a half an hour, and probably less.
Excellent. Cut that number of questions in half, and we should be good. But let's say, even if it was an hour total for Mr. Nyland, that would give us two and a half hours with Ms. Dennison.
I think that would be more than adequate.
Okay, I was going to say, we had
And I think it would be similar to Ms. Rodston, the cross and direct for Ms. Rodston. Okay. And I would request that we present Ms. Dennison first, and that we don't take Mr. Nyland out of order. Just, she's indicated that she has some time constraints on that day, and she could be in the morning. She could be our first witness.
People have other things to do. No way. No, that's fine with me. And I hate to say up front, I will be ruder than normal if need be to move us along. Just know that it's not out of anger, spite, malice toward any particular person. Just trying to, I try to be equally rude to everybody. I hope that comes across. So I think that is a plan. I'll be ready promptly at 9, and we can dive right in with Ms. Dennison, and then later we'll hear from Mr. Nyland, and then I'll try to save a tiny bit of time in case I need to ask any questions, and then also just sort out timing and those types of things. That makes sense?
Works for me.
Okay, anything anyone else needs to cover before we conclude? Stephanie Marshall, I'll start with you.
Okay, well, thank you. And again, I've been just observer most of the day today and probably responsible for some of the dings you were hearing on the computer. So
I was so nice to Stephanie Marshall today. That much I can be honest and say. But nothing further from you, Ms. Marshall.
Nothing further from me. Thank you for checking.
Thank you. And Mr. Haney, I'll go to you next.
I have nothing further. I think the plan sounds good for for the 24th, and we'll keep it as brief as we can. And I will try to keep my questions to 15 minutes, Mr. Examiner, so you're not rude to me. Not that that's a guarantee that you won't be.
No guarantee. And yeah, and Ms. Thornburg, anything from you there at the end?
No, thank you.
Well, I will get my comeuppance this Thursday. I have my own 15 minutes in front of Division II for an obscure PRA argument. And, I'm not used to being on the other side of things. So maybe they'll eat me alive, and I will certainly deserve it. But
one of my partners is the opposition in that case.
Oh, okay. There you go. So Mr. Haney might be telling his colleague to figure out a way to really incite. No, I'm kidding. Anyways, excuse me. Long day. I'll let you all go. But to be clear, July 24th. No, June 24th, not July 24th. Right? June. Yes, June 24th. I'm like, June 24th, we'll start probably at 9, conclude at 1. We know who we're going to hear from, what the order is, and we'll go straight out of the gates. And I think then that is it. So once again, thank you so much to everybody for taking the time and for the respect and professionalism of the group. And I think that's it. And with that, we'll end today's meeting. I hope Ms. Rodston feels better. Certainly hope I do too. And hope none of the rest of you catch whatever is going around through these computers to make us all sick. But with that, we'll end the meeting. Thanks. See you all in about 10 days.